may be around the world, and thank you for your company once again on truth2u.org. That's truth, number two, letteru.org. Joining me is the owner of Six Star Meat and Poultry. The website is sixstarinc.net. That's sixstarinc.net. A Six Star Meat and Poultry is the source for Karaite Jewish slaughter meat and poultry in the United States. The owner describes himself as a biblical Jew who focuses on biblical interpretation and its application to the modern world. He is a certified shochet by Universal Karaite Judaism in Ramla, Israel, and is the only Karaite shochet in the United States. Welcome to the program for the first time, Travis Wheeler.
It's an honor to be here.
Can we begin by asking what led you to Karaite Judaism? I mean, have you been a Karaite all your life? Were you born into Karaite Judaism, or did you come into Karaite Judaism? What was that journey?
Well, that's actually a good question, and it's actually probably the best start. Growing up, my mom's Baptist, my father's missionary Baptist, which is, you know, similar but not the same. Growing up, my mom taught us that we didn't have to join a church until we got to the point of that's what we truly believe within our heart. So growing up, you know, I went to church till about 9, maybe 10. And then one day I said, you know what, I don't want to go to church no more. And my mom asked me why. And I said, well, I don't know if I agree with that. Because at the time I started like trying to read the Bible and stuff. And then, you know, you get into church and people say, oh, well, you know, Jesus done away with the law. So, and I was like, well, what laws are you talking about? So I started reading, and I done an independent study till about 15. And I said, okay, you know what? I'm just going to decide what I want to be religiously at some later point in my life. You know, just something that it became something that was on the back burner that I didn't really focus on. So I got about 16, 17, and I really wanted to start looking at religion, looking at faith. I took a step back in my life and said, you know, what is it that I believe when it comes to God, and what is our purpose as human beings? Originally, I started just doing comparative religion because I was like, I don't know anything about Judaism, nothing at all. So I started looking at Islam. I started looking at Judaism, Buddhism, and a couple other very interesting things, and just studying them all kind of at the same time. I started relating more to the Torah, and I didn't know anybody Jewish. From where I'm from, there was a Jewish synagogue. I don't know if it even still exists, but at the time I was, you know, 17. As I studied, I decided, okay, I'm going to learn, you know, what's the first book? What's the source of the religion? The one thing I found in common with Christianity and Islam was, you know, the Tanakh. So I went to the mall about 30 minutes away from where I live, and I walked in and I said, okay, well, what's the Jewish book? And so I saw a Tanakh. So I picked up a Tanakh, and I picked up Jewish Wisdom by Rabbi Joseph Telushkin, and I still have those same two items to this day. And I started reading, and I said, man, this really, you know, it really speaks to me. Judaism really speaks to me. Well, as I continued reading the Torah, because, you know, like I said, I had a Tanakh. That was all I had. I didn't have Talmud. So I started looking in Jewish Wisdom, and then I bought Jewish Literacy, but also by Rabbi Joseph Telushkin. And, you know, he starts talking about different things, you know, different other books, Mishnah, Torah, Mishnah, Talmud. And I'm like, what is all this stuff? And for a couple years, I just kind of, you know, studied Judaism as a whole. And then that's when I learned about different sects of Judaism. And originally, I equated Orthodoxy with being the closest to the Torah. That was 100% close to the Torah. So I found this rabbi online, and I can't even remember the guy's name. And I've been trying to, like, rack my brain for the last about 5 or 6 years. Well, he and I, we got to talking on over the phone, and of course, you know, he rejected me a couple times, and then we kind of had a decent conversation, and he was saying, you know, you have to learn Talmud Torah, you have to learn Talmud. And I was like, and I asked the question, I said, well, are there any Jews that don't do this? And he says, you're acting like a damn Karaite, and hung up the phone on me. Never heard of a Karaite in my entire life. And I'm sitting here like, what the heck is a Karaite? And I'm thinking he called me something in Yiddish or something. You know, I'm like, I'm looking, and I seen the word Karaite. And I was like, okay, Karaite. And then I got the word Karaite. And I was like, okay, well, what is that? And then I just kept researching. I'm like, ain't no Karaites around here. And then I heard about there's a community, I think I read it like Nehemiah Gordon in some circles, and at that point he was doing a lot of stuff with like Michael Rood and stuff, and I was, you know, not understanding. I kind of shot away. I was like, okay, so, you know, he's doing these talks with these people that believe in Jesus, and I was kind of like a little bit on the fence, and I was like, okay, I don't really understand Messianic Judaism at all, but I was like, okay, I want to meet some of these Karaite people. And eventually it led me to the KJU and the Karaite Jews of America. And when it came to KJU, it was kind of a no-brainer. It was like, okay, I need to learn more about this community, because I was already studying. At that point, I had already started buying books. Any book I could find that had the word Karaite in it. I mean, even if the subject matter was minimal, I was like, whatever I could find. I mean, any little book, pamphlet, any word, Karaite anywhere. And basically, the first course that the KJU done, myself and Isaac Kite, we tried to get in, but we were both late. And so we had to wait until the second class, which was cool. I mean, and we went through the second class of the KJU, a great moment in my life, you know, actually meeting Chief Hakam Moshe Feruz and Hakam Mayer and Yohanan Zakantov and a lot of the other people that were there, and Eli Musa, blessed memory, who I'll kind of speak about later when we get closer to Shechita. But, you know, meeting these people, meeting all the people in the community was like, wow, man, this is great. You know, this is something that, you know, I've never really been around like-minded people. Mm-hmm. So I asked the question at the conversion. I said, okay, so we're Karaites and we're different than the rabbinical Jews. Where do we get our meat from?
Ah, right, of course. Your journey is one from of a Baptist tradition, finding your way to Karaite Judaism. Can I just ask you to clarify one thing? You said that you were speaking with an Orthodox rabbi. You were very interested in converting in to the Orthodox tradition, but there was something about the Talmud, the oral law, if I may, that didn't gel with you to the point where you asked him, "Well, isn't there anybody? Aren't there any Jews that don't believe in the Talmud?" And he said, "You're acting like a Karaite," and hung up on you. Now, what can I just ask? What was it specifically about the Talmud? What was it about the oral law that you found friction with, or you didn't gel with? What was it specifically?
Well, specifically, it was the brachas. There was a bracha for everything, and then when you look at the formula for the bracha, you look at it doesn't just say, "Hey, blessed are you, Adonai, King of the Universe, who sanctifies the commandments and has us put our shoes on." It's like everything's a commandment, and we're not commanded to do a lot of this stuff. And that was kind of where I was a little bit lost, because I was like, I would ask the question, "Well, where's this commandment at?" "It's in the oral Torah." No. "Show me in the written Torah." Mm-hmm. Because I was like, okay, I can understand. Yeah, I can understand it. You know, if we have an interpretation that says, "Hey, this is what we do." But, you know, the way it was put to me was that it was 100% commandment. And that was the part that I was a little bit.
You weren't convinced.
That kind of threw me off. I didn't agree that if I couldn't find it in the written Torah, that I wasn't feeling it. But I was still even at that time, I was still interested in trying to learn more. OK, teach me why. Why? That was my question. Like, why? Mm. If you're telling me that, you know, that it says in the Talmud, why does it say this? And that was one of my first experience when I found that even in the Talmud, there were not agreements. And so with there not being agreement, that was my question. Well, we're saying that this oral Torah came from Mount Sinai. Why is it not just straightforward? Do this. That's it. Why are there arguments in the Talmud? They're like, no. It's written to discuss it. Okay, so whatever we come up with after we discuss it, you're saying it became law. Yes. Whose law? And that was kind of my thought process. And at the time, I was a lot younger, so I was full of vinegar.
Or chutzpah.
You know, just yeah, exactly. And it was like, you can't just tell me this. I don't believe this because you said it don't mean it's right. You know, and that was kind of the thought process. Is I asked a lot of questions to, you know, not to kind of be a thorn in nobody's side, but because I wanted to know. There were things that I wanted to learn. There were things I wanted to be able to walk into a Jewish synagogue and not feel like I'm lost.
Mm, right. And it was your insistence then that led you to Karaite Judaism. And once you were there, you asked the all-important question, where does our meat come from? And that's a good question, because there's a difference between a Karaite slaughter and rabbinic slaughter. We'll get into that. But before we do, now you became a shochet. Okay, so you asked this question after you converted through the KJU, and you decided, well, I'm going to have to do something about this, right? What is a shochet?
A shochet is a ritual slaughter, but it's a person who follows follows the halakha to meet the commandments as written. So it's more than just the actual cut itself. It's, you know, making sure you get rid of all the stuff you can't eat, making sure you remove the sciatic nerve on the hind quarter. Now, I'll go into a lot of detail on that part of it in a little bit, but a shochet is not more or less a butcher. It's a person who takes a live animal and humanely and ethically slaughters this animal. I mean, it's more to it than just simple. You know, you pick up a knife, you go out, you cut animal throat, you let it bleed out. You gotta have a amount of compassion for that animal, mm-hmm. and in having that compassion, knowing that you're gonna knowing the end result of what your action is gonna be, you know, slaughtering that animal in a way that causes the least amount of pain. Mm. And that's a, you know, sometimes that can be a difficult thing, because even though, you know, I can slaughter 1,000 animals or whatever, and I still feel the same way about it. If I get into a situation where, and I always say this, and we'll talk about commercial processing later, but you can't have that compassion if you're running under quota. I've slaughtered for holidays and stuff, and I may need 10 sheep, but physically and mentally, I can only do 4 right now. Mm-hmm. And when I say physically and mentally, it means that there's more to it than just the actual act of the slaughter. It's, you got to be in the right mindset. And if you're, oh, I'm worried about dinner, or it's getting close to, you know, close to dinner time, if I'm worried about other things, then I'm not focused on the task at hand. So normally it's way more to it than just the actual just act of
right
of slaughter. It's because you can go out, anybody can pick up a knife and cut, but making sure you got the precise cut, making sure it's a quick cut, making sure that, you know, you've got that animal in your mind is that's a big part of it. I mean, it's you know, and I'll tell people it's easy because that's what I do, but it's actually not a very easy task.
It's a precise art. So, I mean, I will say when I was on the farm, I slaughtered my own goats, and we made sure that we raised our goats in a way that was that they had wonderful lives. They had they were very healthy. They had plenty of pasture to roam around on. Everything was beautiful. We would milk the girls. We would slaughter the boys. And I remember early on, as we were learning about how to, you know, how to raise goats, how to slaughter and whatnot, we initially, Travis, took them to the local abattoir. And it was, I couldn't believe it. The first time that I went to one of these places, it was one of the most horrible, horrible places I've ever been. And I vowed never to take my animals back there to such an end. And that's when I taught myself to slaughter at home in a humane way, in a way that was fast, that was quick, in a way that's, you're not concerned with time constraints, as you were saying, or any other distractions, but you're absolutely dedicated to what you're doing. Now, the commercial slaughterhouses that we have, many people have no idea what goes on there. So can I ask you, what is the difference between a slaughterhouse like that, and what is the difference between Karaite and rabbinic slaughter, Travis?
All right. Yeah, I was going to say I'll have to break that down in three different process models. In commercial food processing, and just so everyone knows, as well as being a kosher slaughter, I actually am a food safety director. I work with food processing companies, many food processing companies, even those that are not kosher. So I know the industrial model all the way down to the raising of animals, you know, to the back door to stores. In a commercial model, when it comes to raising animals, I mean, a lot of you, you know, you see stuff online, but there are two different ways companies that slaughter meat buy meat. Some are fully integrated, meaning that they raise them themselves. They put them in what we call commercial houses or crammed houses. That goes for, you know, but cattle, you know, a lot of those are feedlot. But when it comes to chickens, turkeys, you know, they're kind of, you know, indoors. And I always say the race is on to get them to adulthood as quick as possible. There are some that buy animals already alive and then they feed them out. Some of those operations, depending on what they're doing, depends on what they feed them. Some go cheap. A lot of them now, especially now, they'll try to go. Some of them will go with a vegetarian diet. So you've got different types of animals. You'll have some that have no antibiotics. You'll have some that's free range, and then you'll have some that have a vegetarian diet. And the difference is that the vegetarian diet, sometimes you can't prove from the beginning of it that animal's life that what it's been given or whatever, because those are animals that you buy at auction. You know, and sometimes you can buy animals at auction that are free range and stuff. So what I found is you go talk to the guy at the auction. But in the commercial model, slaughter is entirely different than any kosher, halal, or anything else, because it's done as quickly as possible. They stun the animal, which kind of kills the brain. It basically, you know, knocks the animal out. It doesn't kill it, but it kind of put a hit. It's like hitting the pause button for a second. It's like, boop, okay, you're out. Now I can, you know, slaughter you or whatever. And so in that process, the goal from point A to Z is to get the animal there as quick as possible and to take it in as many forms as possible. So in that process, you got a whole lot of, I always say, ways and means of making things happen. And a lot of times the commercial processes, in the case of like beef, and I hadn't been in many non-kosher lamb or non-halal lamb processes, but when it comes to beef, they'll slaughter anything. I was in a facility that slaughtered cattle, and they did pregnant old dairy cows. Mm. So, I mean, it didn't matter if it was a bull or a cow, it got slaughtered. You know, you get, you know, these pregnant animals, we shouldn't slaughter the mother and child on the same day, but this is what ends up happening. And this meat can go anywhere. It can go into steaks, it can go into ground meat. Well, when it comes to kosher, traditional kosher slaughterhouses, they only slaughter the males. In Halakha, as far as the Orthodox is concerned, there's no real solution for how to deal with the animals, how to raise them, because most kosher slaughters, they buy animals from other people. You've only got a few smaller ones that actually raise their own. A lot of them just buy them from people who are assigned to doing that for them. So in that case, your animal stock is can be different as opposed to you raising it yourself. Because to your point, you raise it yourself, you know what you have. Hmm. A lot of the kosher, they basically contract out for different people to do it. And one thing to understand about most of your big commercial kosher businesses, the kashrut is done by the kashrut agency, which means that, you know, the owner, he hires the kashrut agency. They go out, they deal with the kashrut side of it. The owner may or may not have a hand in the business at all. He just basically says, hey, we got this many orders got to go out. And, you know, I've seen sometimes where we've got X number of animals, we got X number of orders get filled. I don't know anybody that perfect. So, you know, not to slight any, you know, any other group, because, I mean, there are many out there that try to do the right thing based on their halakha. But when it's a commercial type kosher facility, they're still under the gun to get X number of animals to the box, basically. Mm-hmm. So as an owner of a company, you walk in and you say, okay, I bought 50 cattle. And, you know, they come and say, hey, we got a new shochet. He messed up 10 of your 50. As an owner of a company, the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up the phone, I'm going to call the kashrut organization and say, you know what? Either y'all get it together or I'm going to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of pressure on the shochetim to either do a good job or whatever. But when it comes down to the halakha on slaughter, that's where the conversation is going to get dicey. But in general, the Karaite method is slow and steady, you know, as opposed to meeting these quotas. The one thing that I say here in the U.S., we don't have such a huge community to where I have that much pressure to produce so many animals in a short period of time. It may happen in my lifetime. But at this time, you know, it's small, and we're wanting to ramp up business from, you know, small to a larger model. But since, you know, the community is not so big, there's not that the greed and the pressure is not there. You know, me personally, I tell people I don't do this to become rich. You know, if I wanted to be rich, you know, I'd do something different. You know, I wouldn't. This is not what I would do. It's not about me. It's about everybody else. It's about, you know, having people not have to ask that question about where the meat comes from and whether it's kosher or not. Mm. So the difference between the three types of processes is when it comes down to traditional commercial slaughter, you don't know what you're going to get in the box. You don't know, especially if you're a God-fearing and you try to follow Torah or Sola Scriptura, you may end up having something that you don't want. Like I said, I've dealt with so many parts of the food processing system that I think I'll just leave the conversation right there on that.
Sure.
When it comes to the commercial process.
Now, when it comes to the actual process of slaughter, does the actual process differ greatly between Karaite and Rabbinic?
Yes. In Karaite Halakha, we have to cut what we call the four signs. The esophagus, the windpipe, and the two arteries. Those are the four things that have to be completely severed. So to that end, our process is a little bit more strict than the rabbinical method. The rabbinical method is that you can have two of them and still be okay. And that's one of the concerns a couple of people that I've met with that have been really, really close in the rabbinic circle. They went vegetarian for that reason, because, you know, they go in and they're thinking, okay, you gotta, you know, cut everything, and they're like, no, if it's not all four of them, it's okay. And this is not, like I said, this is not everybody doesn't feel the same way, but in a lot of your commercial operations, it, you know, it's accepted as being okay, because if you look at the Mishnah Torah, this is what it says. I mean, it's okay. Karaite Halakha is less. I always say, when you compare the book, the Mishnah, for Shachita, and you compare it to the Karaite process, our process is much simpler. It's just more strict. It cuts to the chase.
Right.
You know, we don't put in, well, if you're doing this, you know, it's okay to do this. If you're doing this, it's okay to do that. We don't have that. We don't have those. I don't always call them trap doors. We don't have a bunch of trap doors that you can go down, or escape routes. If you make a mistake, you've made a mistake. Sorry. And, you know, I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, I've made mistakes in slaughter. I mean, I had a crew working with me on a farm project, and we basically, my hand was kind of wet, and the knife slipped out of my hand. Well, we continued to slaughter, but the animal was rendered not kosher. And my workers got a whole lamb for free. Right. You know, and I mean, and it was, you know, I mean, I'm the type of person that, you know, if I have a crew, or I know people who are, you know, not Jewish, most of the time, even when I made mistakes, the slaughter still met the Mishnah Torah, but it didn't meet the Karaite standard.
Sure.
And so it's
they benefit. If they're not Jewish, they benefit from that. So now, just tell me, Travis. Then, okay. So there's the two arteries that need to be cut: the windpipe and the esophagus, all at the same time, with a very, very sharp blade, and therefore this is why Karaite slaughter is considered to be stricter, if you like, than rabbinic slaughter. Then the question then becomes, Travis, where in the text does such a instruction come from? Because immediately, as you know, those who recognize that Karaites do not acknowledge the oral Torah as authoritative, therefore their practices must come from the written Torah. Where in the written Torah is this directive specifically?
Well, the primary purpose of it is to get rid of the blood, and that's in Leviticus. So what the Hakamim done, and this is the great thing about Karaite Judaism, is we don't just say, okay, it's written, that's it. We take, okay, it's written. Now, how do we achieve that? How do we achieve that goal? And so over the years, the Hakamim did the study, and then the rabbinics, we both came to the same conclusion that cutting at the neck was the right location, and that would be sufficient to remove the most amount of blood. So when you look at Leviticus 17:10, where it says, you know, you should not eat the blood, or basically, you know, because it says more than one time, You have to look at not only just the actual written text, but how do you apply that written text? And so when it came down to slaughter, there was a couple things that had to happen. One, you look at the compassion of the animal itself. You don't want to, you know, cause it harm, because we're commanded to, you know, treat our animal. Even though it's at the time of slaughter, he's still our responsibility. So when you cut the esophagus, you end what they call the act of nutrition, the ability to eat. Cutting the windpipe takes out the breathing. Mm. And the two arteries, basically, that's where you cut the blood off to the brain. When you cut the blood off to the brain, what ends up happening is the animal itself, he goes out. It's like a stunning process. When the brain, it's a shock. It's the same as stunning, but not stunning. It gives the mind a shock for a second, because the brain is needing blood. So it's out of blood, and it's telling the heart to pump blood. So herein where there's another big difference in doing it by the Karaite method, the heart continues to pump feverishly. And in that heart pumping, what it ends up doing is it pumps out the circulatory system. And in doing so, what you end up with is an animal that will have the most blood pumped out of it. So therefore, by increasing the amount of blood that leaves the animal, do you help, you know, the people who are going to eat the meat to meet the commandment? Mm. But one thing that I can say I do from time to time is once we get done with the animal, I'll take the heart and cut open the heart to see if there's any blood in it. So in essence, that's a help. The one thing about slaughter to also know is that, you know, slaughter is not a quote unquote commandment. It's a permission. You know, we're permitted to actually do slaughter. It wasn't you're commanded to slaughter. It was it's a permission, because, you know, prior to being able to slaughter, you know, if you read text, it shows we would have been more vegetarian or.
So now let me ask you then, with that in mind. What then is the difference? This is a question that I often get. What then is the difference between kosher slaughter and Islamic slaughter?
I sometimes use a halal slaughter house. And some halal slaughterers do a good job and some don't. And, you know, that's a nice way to put it. Their standards are not the same, because their standard is pretty much if a Muslim does a slaughter, it's halal. A lot of Islamic people, they really care for their animals. They, you know, they try to do 100%, you know, what we would call the right thing, but their slaughter standard isn't the same. They don't have to cut four signs.
So then the question becomes, is it okay for someone who wants to keep kosher to derive their meat, if they don't have kosher facilities near them, to derive it from a halal source? And what it seems to be what you're saying is that it can't be guaranteed. Even though the processes may be similar, it can't be guaranteed that this animal has been looked after in such a way and slaughtered in such a way that that makes it okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing that the note is, like I said, I work with a lot of commercial companies, and when it comes to chickens and stuff, they'll run the chickens on the same lines that they run the commercial. In a commercial chicken plant, an animal is slaughtered by a machine. It's not even slaughtered by hand. And there's some that do halal that don't do hand slaughter. So you're putting your halakha or your standard in the hands of a machine that basically just cuts the throat. So what I've seen in halal is there's a very a wide array of differences. It depends on which facility's doing the halal. It depends on who's certifying the halal. The one thing to note about halal is if I'm Muslim and I want to start me a halal agency, if I'm accepted as a Muslim, I can do so. Whether I'm nationally known or not is beside the point. So there's no set training and standard. So if I know how to slaughter, I can say I'm doing slaughter, you know, over here. This is my deal. My stuff's halal. And so the standard is usually that a Muslim is supposed to do the slaughter. And how these companies get away with it is they play the play a blessing while the animal slaughter, or they have a guy that works in the slaughter area that's Muslim. So right. there is a wide array when it comes down to Islamic slaughter. You can go from, you know, you can go from machine slaughter to hand slaughter to people that actually care, and the others that are just out for a buck. So, like I said, there's no, I guess in Orthodoxy, you look at the, you start looking at the, like, OU. And the Jewish tradition is, you know, it's pretty much, you know, the Mishnah Torah and some other books that have been written off of that. And their tradition is different. It can be entirely different. And every person that trains is not trained in the same manner. But for the people that I know that do halal, you know, they say their biggest part is, you know, making sure you say the blessing and that's it, which, yeah, that's fine. But there are some out there that, I mean, they go above and beyond to care for their animals.
Right.
So there's a, me personally, I don't eat halal. I won't eat halal. I mean, and I'm not just saying that from being a shahed, it's just from working in the industry. I can, in some ways, I can see almost no difference in halal and just grocery store meat, as I would call it.
Now, what are you currently offering? 6-star meat and poultry. What are you currently producing?
We're basically gearing up for the Pesach season.
Mm.
So this Pesach, we're looking at, and that's kind of our grand, what I would call the relaunch of 6-star meat and poultry, or from being 6-star foods previously. What we're wanting to do is we're going to offer chicken, maybe turkey if my uncle can get them raised up a few more pounds. And we're looking at beef in the summer, and of course lamb for Pesach. So that's our biggest thing, is that just getting more poultry in there, because that's been the biggest, one of the biggest negatives that I've had with customers. We hadn't been able to offer poultry, and part of the reason is live chickens have prices have went through the roof. And so, you know, not to speak on the GoFundMe too fast, but that's where our void is, and that's what we're trying to meet, is being able to have all that. And once, after Pesach, we're planning on doing year-round processing. So, you know, with the help of God, we'll do and succeed.
Mm. Now, you, Travis, you just mentioned the GoFundMe. You do have there is a GoFundMe, and it is for a fundraising for a Karaite kasher meat processing facility. What can you tell us about that?
All right. Well, what we're doing is, in the past, we've had to use other facilities to do a lot of the processing. And so what we're wanting to do is we're going to open a storefront. And this storefront will give us the opportunity to process year-round and to ship year-round. So in doing so, it's kind of, for us, it's a win-win, because we'll be able to provide meat for the community at large. And if somebody's in the area, you know, we'd have it where they can come and look at our process, look at what we're doing, and be able to try new products. Because the goal here is not to, in the past, we've only focused on a couple of different things, you know, just you know, keeping it simple, not really kind of thinking outside of the box. And what we want to do now, we're looking at thinking outside of the box. We want to create a whole lot of different products, and this facility would give us the opportunity to do so. I mean, it's very small, but it doesn't put us in a situation to where our, basically, to say it the not easy way is, I'm really big on cost. And I deem that kosher meat is too expensive. And it's not, it's too expensive, not because it has to be, but because it's overregulated. And so that you end up having so many additional costs that occur because people are having to check so many different things because you can't trust the people that you have working for you. So the goal is stay small or start small and, you know, does have a craft, be good at what we do, but also offer different products such as breakfast sausages, you know, lamb strips, pepperoni. I mean, we've I've been working on a lot of different products. And the reason that I'm looking at doing this is because what I've run into in the past is we end up having a lot of extra meat, shanks, a lot of other like steaks. Some of this stuff doesn't sell very well. So in an essence, what we had to do is when we shut down, we thought, okay, what do we need to do to be successful? And to be successful, we've got to have a home for everything. And having a home for everything is creating new products to do to be able to have a home for everything.
Right.
So that's a big part of this whole GoFundMe. It's not all about the processing facility, because the facility itself, it's coming regardless. But our bigger part of it is actually the live operation side, because we're wanting to raise Dorper sheep, breed them, raise them ourselves, and we want to have our chickens and turkeys, you know, where we raise them and we control 100% from birth to the time of slaughter.
There it is. So I'm going to put the link for this GoFundMe under this post if people would like to contribute to the kosher Karaite kosher meat processing facility that Travis is aiming to put together. Then you can certainly do that, and that would be a wonderful thing. Now, there was one other question that I wanted to ask you, and that was in regards to, oh, how do people, okay, now before we go, Travis, how do people order from you and what you're producing now? How can they put in forward orders? Can they do that? Do they have to be within any specific area within the US, or are you able to send meat? I mean, how far and wide can people order from?
Anywhere in the United States at this time. The goal in the future is to order from or be able to ship internationally and do some export.
That's Australia.
May be a year or two. Well, I've had people from Australia, Papua New Guinea. I hate to miss somewhere. There were like four or five different countries that we've been kind of researching on what the export requirements are, and you know, trying to find either brokers or something to be able to do that, because sometimes I don't do a whole lot of export other than, you know, sending stuff out. So it's like, okay, what are the volume requirements for export? And that's the kind of stuff that is going to have to be worked out, which is why I say, you know, it'll probably be a couple of years, because, you know, knowing how much we have to send and or how much can they buy that we can allot, plus figuring out how to get it to the people that want it. That's another part of it. You know, you don't want to just ship something to Australia and then say, hey, it's 12 hours away from you
right.
in this one little shop over here, you know. And so that's the other part of it is, you know, figuring out the entire supply chain so that we have nothing that goes to waste. And that's kind of where I am on that. But for somebody that wants to speak with me about any meat right now, it's I probably won't be taking orders until closer to the middle of February. So it's about 2 weeks from now. Because we're working on some different things such as price and structure, etc. But I'll be posting up a link on the sixstarinc.net site. Also, if someone wants to contact me personally, you can email me at travis.wheeler, 80, and that's 80 at gmail.com. That way you can just contact me at this point. But once we get ready to publish the post, we'll post it on our Facebook page. We've got a Facebook page. We've got a page on LinkedIn. We've also got our website. You can find it. We've got 6starinc.net and microemit.com. And that's where you'll find a lot of information about the company. One thing that I do want to throw in is that when you look at purchasing, you know, the shipping has sometimes been a hassle. So we've been trying to look at different ways to get meat shipped a lot cheaper. And the goal within two to three years is to actually do deliveries, which means we'll take meat and bring it to, we'll start in Georgia and just, you know, do a geographic area. And then at some point, the goal may end up being to go all the way out west once a month or something. We hadn't figured that part of it out. We're trying to figure out how to do it where we can deliver for an inexpensive price. So
excellent. Well, thank you for those details. Again, I will put those links under this post so people can go to that, including your email address. Now, we have to say goodbye to you, Travis, because you're about to meet up with Ken Lane, who, truth to you listeners, know very well. What are you two doing?
Well, what we do is every Thursday night at 8 o'clock, we have an abbreviated Karaite prayer. It's actually on the Kol Hesed HaTorah Facebook page. Ken does the live stream and I do the prayer via freeconferencecall.com. So we basically got a call in number, or you can get online through freeconferencecall.com and you can kind of go through the prayer with us. It takes about 15 minutes, but it's basically a short prayer to bring us closer to Sabbath. Most Karaites don't like to have a Sabbath service online. So we do a Thursday night service, which is kind of short. We invite anyone who wants to come on, please do. The call-in is probably the easiest way to participate. If you do the Facebook Live, we wouldn't be able to hear you. But we have broken the prayer down to where we have volunteer sections. We broke down the Shema into three paragraphs. And so we'll ask for volunteers for the three parts. For three paragraphs, we've got a daily sanctification, which is basically a part of Genesis for that day, you know, first day, second day, third day, all the way up to the seventh day, which, of course, we won't do the seventh day because we're not online for that. And we've got this prayer called Hosha of the Night, which is a few lines that we say. But it's every Thursday night, 8 p.m., Facebook Live on the Kol Hesed HaTorah site. Me and Ken are both also members of Kol Hesed HaTorah. And Kol Hesed HaTorah is a group that kind of unites Karaites and other Jews, as well as Orthodox. We got an Orthodox rabbi who's in the group too. And so he and I kind of spearhead big parts of this group. And what our goal is to bring about Kol Israel, by bring us all together by teaching people the differences and similarities within our faith. So, you know, it's an organization where we just, you know, we want to have Jewish unity. You know, in the Orthodox community, sometimes there's a stigma about Karaite Judaism that, you know, we're these heretics or we're these people that nobody knows, and nobody knows any details about us. So we try to spread the word. We try to get people to go out and purchase the book, especially like from the Karaite Press, etc. Because you always say knowledge is power, and sometimes people don't have that knowledge of what Karaites are, what Karaite Judaism is. They only know what somebody told them that may have heard about a Karaite 30 years ago. Mm. So it's getting people to understand what Karaite Judaism is in a whole, and not just, you know, what people think Karaite Judaism is. So
excellent. Thank you for that. We've also had Rabbi Yonathan on the program before as well, the rabbi of Kol Chesed that you're referring to. So thank you, my friend, owner of 6-Star Meat and Poultry. The website, once again, 6starinc.net, also mikraemet.com, mikraemet.com. I'm going to put these links underneath this post so that people can go and learn more about it and put in some orders. And in fact, we would love you to also contribute to that GoFundMe for a Karait kosher meat processing facility. Thank you, Travis Wheeler.
And thank you. I'm blessed to be here. I'm blessed to speak with you. And everyone out there, you know, understand that if you donate, your money's not going to waste. Monthly, what we're planning to do on any contribution on the GoFundMe, we're going to be posting the, you know, basically what comes in and what goes out of that part of it. I put a lot of personal funds into the business because, you know, it's my baby. But we want to make, I want to make sure that there's transparency. So if you donate, don't think that, oh, if I donate, they're going to just take the money and run. No, we want to make sure that everybody knows where their money's going, as well as, you know, being able to see what the end result is from this project. So we do appreciate anything. You know, I told the guy, I said, if you put $2 in or three, I'd be just as happy as you put $1,000 in. But, you know, if you got $1,000, you know, you can give it. I mean, won't cry about it.
But, fair enough. Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much for taking the time on Truth to You. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right. And I look forward as well. I mean, I'm sure we'll do this again. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You've been listening to Truth to You with me, Jono Vandoor. Join me on the coming Truth to You Israel tour. Details at our website, truthtoyou.org. That's truth, number two, letter U.org. Thank you for your company, and I hope you'll join us again. Until next time, shalom.